hey, we got the Angels and Blue Jays in September. Everybody told us in March that was going to be a huge series. So we're loving life right now. So are the Angels, really, when you think about it.
Who says there's no meaningful game in September, right?
they're battling for 10th in the league. I mean, come on. Nobody's getting relegated. There isn't a person in New York who doesn't think Jeter's going to gut it out, but you saw him probably all season long, and despite the opening day for him, at least, home run, he never did look quite right in 17 games, did he? He couldn't do the work in the offseason to make him look right.
No, he couldn't. I think the thing that was most pointed was what finally drove him off the field was just being able to do a simple thing like plant at shortstop and get an accurate throw off. I think that was when it really, the bells kind of went off that this isn't going to be good for anybody if we just keep throwing him out there. I mean, it was kind of like as his buddy A-Rod said, the pink elephant in the room, right? The idea that, for ground balls, you would just kind of jog it out, which is so anti what Derek Jeter is all about. But he had to do it to preserve his health. And, they didn't want him to push it. And all of this stuff. Like, if you're going to play Major League Baseball, you got to play Major League Baseball at a certain speed. And no one understands that better than Derek Jeter, which is, I think, why, he was about as zen as he can be. I mean, I know he seemed a little bit argumentative, but look, I think he understood this was for the best, not only for the team, but also for himself, if he doesn't want to play at least one more year next year.
And all that said, any other year, this would be a demoralizing moment for the Yankees. Somehow they're one game back, but they've had Jeter for all of 17 games. And even in those, it's not like he has been at his best or performed. Does this galvanize New York? It certainly doesn't hurt them.
No, it doesn't hurt them. I think, look, you're right. In the context of this year, I mean, you think about the long stretches of time they've played without Jeter, without Granderson, without A-Rod, they continually play without Teixeira. That's a lot of talent, a lot of salary to not be hit to be playing this year, and yet they're in terrific position to at least maintain a run over the last week, 2.5 weeks of the season. I don't think it's certainly not going to devastate them. Will it galvanize them? Probably not, only because they've only had him for one out of every nine games this year anyway, so they're used to it. And I think that as much as anything, we've always written poetry about Jeter's presence and his intangibles and all the stuff he brings to a team. And as a captain, he's still going to be present. And so you got to think that's going to have at least a little bit of an impact. And certainly yesterday, as any indication, I mean, he was a very active presence in the dugout as a cheerleader, which is certainly not the role he wants, but one he's going to have to embrace and one it looks like he already has embraced.
Mike Vaccaro joining us, New York Post. Read his stuff. It's excellent. Let me ask you about there's economic implications with A-Rod getting suspended next year, even if he gets that commuted down to 100 games. But there are also economic implications with Derek Jeter deciding, I want to do this. I'm trying. But he decides eventually to retire. I mean, it probably doesn't make the difference between re-signing Cano and not, or re-signing Granderson and not. But those are huge priorities. I noticed Randy Levine said yesterday, hey, we're not going to the wall, basically, with Robinson Cano. That's probably posturing. He should be their number one priority in the offseason, should he not?
He should be, but I'll tell you what, if anybody understands the ramifications of long-term contracts, it's the Yankees. Now, obviously, Eli's had a little bit of a renaissance here, but we're talking about a very small sample. We're talking about a guy with two bad hips. I mean, you look at CeCe Sabathia, who they're still into for over $100 million, and he looks like a very ordinary pitcher with a lot of time left on his contract. So you can kind of understand why the Yankees would be less than excited to be able to, keep employing Robinson Cano at age 40. Who knows? Maybe he's going to be the exception to the rule. But certainly, I mean, not just the Yankee players, but you look across baseball, you see the Albert Pujols deal, you see the Hamilton deal. I mean, suddenly these are these are real warning signs as to what you get when you sign a player already past 30, as Cano is, to a 7, 8, 9, 10-year deal. I think the Yankees are going to be very reluctant to go that far.
And the Yankees, again, one game back, big one in Baltimore tonight, and yet again, out trots Phil Hughes. The record is not sterling. The ERA has been absolutely in the tank, but these are the guys they go with, and yet somehow they still pick up wins.
Yeah, I thought it was a little strange that they took him out of the rotation that one time over the weekend. I mean, Huff, who replaced him, I mean, it wasn't like they were replacing the Sandy Koufax. I understand that that Hughes had his difficulties, and he'll certainly be on a short leash tonight. But, look, I mean, not everybody in baseball can be wrong, and everybody in baseball believes that what this guy is a guy who's on kind of a bad roll in a bad ballpark, You know, who's pitched a lot less of his stuff. He's also a guy that I think wouldn't surprise anybody if he goes out there and throws a three-hitter, because he's got that kind of stuff in him. And, you know, the way things are going for the Yankees, I don't think that would surprise anybody if that's exactly what he went out and did against the Orioles, who 2 days ago looked like they were about ready to stomp on the Yankees next, and now it's completely the opposite direction. It's amazing how baseball can work that way sometimes.